Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Raw Room Podcast. Before we get into this really interesting conversation today with Paul G. Johnson, I just want to let you know about a couple of things. The first one is I'm now offering one-to-one workshops. That's a bespoke day for you. We can go to various places across the north of England, like the Lake District or the North York Moors or Flamborough Head. Anywhere you choose within that sort of northern area, we can have a great day, one-to-one. It's sort of 8 hours. We'll try and hit either sunset or sunrise. At this type of time of year, we can hit both. Head over to firstmanphotography.com, click on the store, and then check out the one-to-one workshops. I would love to have you along on one of those. I'm now also offering a seven-day free trial to the Raw Room. That has the Landscape Photography Masterclass. Now, on that Landscape Photography Masterclass, I take you through everything. We have live shoots in the field that includes post-processing and printing, and the stuff that's out in the field covers a lot of what we would talk about on the one-to-ones. So just go to firstmanphotography.com/rawroom. You can then click subscribe, get a seven-day free trial, and I hope to see you there. Hello there. If you have ever considered doing vlogging, or vlogging one of your landscape photography trips, or your street photography trips, then you are not alone. I've been doing it for a number of years now, and there are literally hundreds, maybe even thousands of people starting to do it week on week and uploading their content onto YouTube. Now, there are a lot of great reasons why you would want to start doing a photography vlog. It's a really nice documentary of what you're doing through the years that could be useful or just interesting to your kids or your relations in the future. Everyone really has their own reason about why they start vlogging. There are, however, probably some things you should consider before you start. So I've sat down with Paul G. Johnson on some time I spent with him recently, and we just got chatting about vlogging and some of the things to consider, some of the reasons why we might do it, some little tips and tricks going right through this. I think you'll find this really interesting if you have ever considered vlogging yourself, or you should still find it interesting even if you just are interested in how photographers create content for YouTube or do vlogging or anything like that. So it's a really great conversation. So I'm just going to play it. It's quite long, about 45 minutes, I think. So I'll just play it through and I'd love to hear what you think.
I thought that's a good idea. I vlog biocamping stuff, so I'll vlog photography stuff, and people watched, and then the ego does kick in a little bit because people are watching, and then there's that balance between, well, I don't want to let people down by not vlogging because they're enjoying the vlogs.
And
it's nice because you get that interaction with people that maybe you didn't get the interaction of.
Is that how you got started then?
That's how I got started. Right. I did the Porthwen shoot, and if you watch my Porthwen shoot, Adam, you'll know that I did it for no other reason other than not expecting anybody to watch, because everything, literally, it was how not to be a landscape photographer. Yeah, because everything, every shot, every single shot went wrong. So I ended up with salt spray on the lens that then ruined every shot after that.
Yeah.
I tried to take some Urbex shots of the old archaeology, and they came out terribly. When I was set up a shot, I didn't realise I was on ISO 6000 for like five of the shots that I was vlogging.
Yeah.
And when I got home, they were as noisy as anything. So
I think that's how it's developed, though. The landscape vlogging genre has developed. Because I think in the early days, people, and still to some extent now, people do want to see that, don't they?
Mm.
They want to see people struggling like they struggle.
Mm. I think that's maybe where it resonated with them. Because it was an honest vlog.
Yeah.
Because I'll be honest with you, there's no way I would put that vlog out now.
Why is that?
Because people follow me. I wasn't expecting anybody anybody to watch it. As I say, I got wild camping vlogs. I didn't even call them vlogs then, because they weren't really vlogs. I was just videoing it.
Yeah.
And mountain biking vlogs and downhill mountain biking vlogs that I did with my best mate.
Did you?
That nobody ever watches.
No,
I'll send you some links. I wouldn't actually necessarily get people who watch me from landscape photography, because there is profanity in those videos. Because it's two lads having fun. And it was that first video was just done off the back of nothing, and then I thought, God, 700-800 people watch this,
yeah,
and they're actually commenting and have enjoyed it, so I better go and do another one.
Yeah,
and then I did another one, and then it.
Why did you do one in the first place then? What
kids? It was the kids. I loved. I'd seen Tommy,
yeah,
and I thought that's a really good idea, and I have done videos on YouTube. So let's the kids still watch my videos and laugh.
Do they?
Mountain biking videos and my wild camping videos, yeah. And I thought, well, I'll go on and do, because photography has been a passion for mine for donkey's years. And so is golf, but you can't take a video camera around when you're golfing, it don't work. So for photography, I thought, I'll go out one morning. I had a GoPro, because I'd use the GoPro for doing the mountain biking stuff on the chest mount, and I just put a muff over it to stop the wind,
right,
and put it on a selfie stick, and so the video itself, the footage is really raw, the audio is not good, and people watched, and I thought, and people said, oh yeah, I like your down to earth walks and all approach, and I thought, well, if people are getting something out of it and I'm enjoying doing it, so why not continue? So there was no right, okay, Tommy, because Tommy Eaton only had 70,000 subscribers back then,
right?
And you had less.
I had about six,
and there were three people who all watched. There was yourself, there was Tom. After I started vlogging, the first person, I'll be honest, it was Tom,
yeah.
And then I saw yourself, and then I saw another guy who does the Peak District stuff, and I've forgotten his name, and he doesn't vlog very much anymore, and he's really, really cool. He only had about 3,000 subs at the time, and I watched his stuff because he was local to me,
yeah.
And they were the only people that watched, because they were really the only people that were out there when I started.
I think so. I started off the back of watching Casey Neistat. Mm. And I think I've told you this story before, but when I first got going, there was no such thing as a landscape vlog. And my very first vlog, I just went out to tell the story of my day as a photographer doing landscape photography. Mm. And I didn't even put the images in.
No.
Because I was just thinking about getting the video out to stick to my YouTube schedule. And didn't even put the images in. And then everybody was saying, Adam, where's the images?
Mm.
I said, yeah, that's a pretty good point, that. Mm. So on the next one, I did. But even the next one wasn't particularly a landscape vlog. I started talking about wedding photography and stuff.
So your channel was a general photography channel?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of always has been, but I've pushed it down the landscape route. But then,
relatively recently, innit?
But then it sort of just, I kept on doing it. And then I think it was about 9 episodes in where someone mentioned you should check out Tom Heaton.
Mm.
And then obviously, when I then started looking at other people doing similar things, there was only me and him in the UK at that time doing
anything like that. There was another guy with a big beard and a bald head. He was doing a few vids.
Right.
And I can't remember his name. And then, and then there was another guy who does locally. So when I researched it, there was about 4 or 5 people that vlogging. And the biggest ones by far was yourself and Tom. And the others were, you know, about 3 or 4,000 subs, something like that. And the people have grown subsequently. And I just found the whole thing interesting because it was easy. It was videography, which ties in a little bit with photography as well. And you can look at my vids. There's no video production in my vids, especially my early ones anyway. Yeah. No attempt. It was a GoPro with a muff on the end to cover up for audio so you didn't get the wind noise. And it was just come and follow me. And take my shots, and then.
So with the gear now, you're still a proponent of that simple setup, aren't you?
I am.
What does that do for you?
The simple setup.
Yeah.
It gives me because my motivation isn't being right. I need to go out and because I want to earn $100 on this video. My motivation to go out was that people enjoy watching it. But the primary motivation to go out in the first place is to take. Photography and take stills,
yeah.
And so when I thought, let's go to a DSLR down the DSLR route with the big muff on the front and this, that, and the other, and I'm carrying all my kit as well, I had less motivation to go out.
Did you
absolutely. And I've bought a Canon similar to the one you've got here, and I've got a wind muff with the external boom thing on,
yeah.
And I've used it, but it was just an extra faff. And so now, primarily I use the GoPro, but the new Incantesh of the GoPro kept stopping. So I've now gone over to the DJI Osmo Pocket.
Okay. Yeah.
The only problem with that is field of view. You've got to hang it out a long way away with a Rode wireless mic on it. And it's tiny.
Does the mic plug directly into it then?
Plugs directly into the base with one of those APS-C
adapters,
bottom ones. APC. And then your road mic goes in, and then with the road mic as well, I'm not worried about a wire going to the box.
Yeah.
The box itself you can clip on.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant. So it's clip, switch it on, the gimbal, and it's all gimbal in the DJI Osmo Pocket as well, and it's there in front of me.
Yeah.
And all I've got to do is remember to have it a little bit further away. And then you stick it on a tripod, and I suppose that's my only thing now that I'm carrying, which is a bit of a pain above just being a stills photographer, is another tripod. But you stick it on a tripod and it active tracks you, so you can walk around and it'll follow you.
Yeah, that's clever.
And it's simple.
So is the still image always been primary for you?
Absolutely. And I think it's been a journey as well. I think it's been a journey through my vlogs, because I look at my still images when I originally started vlogging. As I said, the first one was a nightmare. And my still images have come on hugely. And that is down to YouTube.
Yeah.
That is down to this image has got to be dead right.
Yeah.
And I want this shot to look right.
That documentary over the years is a huge thing for me.
Mm.
And a huge part of why I enjoy it when I look back. Because when I sort of first got going, looking at some of the photographers that I had a lot of respect for who were well-established and a bit older, I was thinking, imagine if I could look back at what they'd done and what their workflow was, what their approach was when they were 30 or 35 or whatever. Imagine how fascinating that would be now, 30 years on,
and
to see that.
I think that's an awesome motivation to do YouTube. Because not only for you personally, for your personal journey, for Adam Kornach, but your family and your kids.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you're 65, 70, your kids and your grandkids are going to still have that and be able to say, look at what granddad and dad did.
Absolutely.
And follow that journey.
I like to wind my wife up, because she doesn't watch any of my videos.
Does she not?
She's very supportive.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't do all this without her support. But she doesn't watch the videos. And I always wind her up and said, it's fine, you don't need to watch them. I said, you watch them when I'm dead.
Yes. Just, does that annoy you?
Yeah.
I say that to my wife. I said, you'll miss me when I'm gone.
Yeah.
Why are you so morbid? I said, it's not morbid. I say, obviously wind you up so much.
So do you get interested in the filmmaking side of it as well? Because that's definitely something that's what's kept my interest really high, is that exploration of filmmaking and video as well.
It's not my main motivational driver, no. But having said that, when I was a kid, I was massively into Super 8 and cine stuff. And but it was stop motion stuff. It was the Nick Park stuff that I did. It was take a picture of a plasticine model and then move it and take another picture and move it. And I had a movie club when I was a kid. So I don't know why I haven't embraced that as much as maybe other people. I think personally it's because I don't want to be carrying a hell of a lot of kit to produce those slick movies. So you know, I've got a drone and I've got other video cameras, and I did invest in a gimbal for the GoPro, and I was one of the first people that used gimbal on the GoPro. And it became popular because it does produce the image stabilization, that you get something with a DSLR.
I think it's one of the things that I kind of got really interested in, but as you increase the complexity of the filmmaking, so you buy the drone, you buy the slider, you buy XYZ, you increase the complexity, you increase the quality of the product, I guess, in terms of look and feel, but it just becomes so much more difficult if you're doing it by yourself.
It does.
And that detracts from your photography.
Yeah, and it's pros and cons to what people enjoy, because what you get is you get a very polished video. A very polished video that takes an awful lot of money and an awful lot of time to invest in.
Yeah.
And when I watch the videos that I enjoy watching, as long as the audio is decent, that's what puts you off. Some of my older vlogs, the audio was terrible. And so that's what I have up the game with.
Yeah.
But if the shooting is a little bit raw, so there's a little bit of shake, or, you know, the camera angle swizzes over, that don't worry me. What you find with YouTube, isn't it, that everybody... Once somebody does it, everybody does it. So somebody buys a drone and does drone shots, and then everybody's doing drone shots. Somebody buys a slider, and then everybody's doing the slider. And then actually what happens is those slick videos become the norm, And when you look at something that's maybe not quite as slick, it just resonates a bit more.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the people that are doing the zoom in and out and the choppy type of videography. I like that stuff because it looks a little bit more off the cuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think undoubtedly, and it's one of the things I talk about a lot, is that the story is primary for me. It's always been the case. Mm. So whether the drone shots, they've always been used in movies, but with helicopters, that establishing aerial shot is a big part of the storytelling.
Of course.
Especially when you go into such beautiful landscapes that look amazing from
and it is very popular with the people that watch.
Yeah. I mean, a few of the times my wife has paid attention to it is when it's been the drone. And it literally adds another level to the video, doesn't it?
But it can be overused, can't it?
Absolutely. I mean, what I just said there, it's establishing. Yeah. That's all it does. It doesn't.
Yeah.
So if you drone shot drones on for like 2 minutes, it's too much.
Mm. I think that storytelling is a very important part of, but from a subliminal point of view. So I try and get some of my personality through without trying to get my personality through, if you know what I mean. So the Isle of Skye one I did, the Old Man of Stour, it was 50 second intro of flying over the lock towards the Old Man of Stour with some dialogue from somebody who is inspired philosophical point of view. I did that for me. I didn't do that. I didn't think, oh, that's going to look good. It meant a lot to me, and it still sends shivers up my back. And that's something for my kids. Yeah. That's something for my kids to watch and say, so that's what Dad used to think. Mm. You know what I mean? That was his philosophy. That was his thought on life. So I think a lot of my vlogs have been more
But telling your own story is important, isn't it? It's part of it. And I think that's what people connect with on these videos a lot of the time, is they want... I mean, we've talked about it before on our podcast, haven't we? About
and off camera,
what people want from a video. And I think part of the personality of the person in it is a significant part of that, especially in terms of what keeps them coming back.
Mm. That we've had lots of conversations about that, and it's not self-deprecating because I've always said to you, and I don't want an answer, it's not a rhetorical question, or it is a rhetorical question, I've always struggled to understand why people watch what I do, and people give me answers to it.
Yeah.
But it has to be that people engage with that person, my personality. It's got to be, because there are a lot of people out there doing better images and doing better videography, but people keep coming and watching. So it's what twigs with the viewer, isn't it?
Yeah. You do have certain USPs, though, don't you? Like unique selling points for your videos. Like you made your hats into a character, didn't you? Like, but, which is really great, right?
Again, that wasn't engineered at all for the first year and a half of vlogging.
I think all those great things that click like that aren't, are they?
No. I wore the tea cozy hat because it's down out and it's down warm. Yeah, and I wore baseball caps because I'm receding. And I've always worn baseball caps and normally sunglasses as well, but I don't wear sunglasses.
They keep the sun out your eyes as well.
Yeah, they do. And I shoot all the time with a baseball cap. And when I'm shooting, the baseball cap goes that way. Or a hat. And yeah, I must admit that I have been to a shop up in Scotland and I bought a tartan cap.
Mm.
And I thought, well, it'll look good on the video, but I've not actually used it. Because I thought it's a bit cliche, is that? So the hats have become synonymous with me, but by mistake.
Yeah. So if you were starting again today, if you had to start from scratch, would you do anything different? What would you recommend? Like, any top tips or...?
I think you asking me that question from a personal level is a difficult one because I've given you the reason why I did it, which was for the kids, and then as a history book, a living history book.
Yeah.
And I suppose some people will say, well, you didn't need to put it on YouTube to do that. Well, I did because Mark, my friend, would watch it, or my other mate would watch it. You know what I mean? And he does cycling vlogs, and I watch his cycling vlogs. But I think you've really got to go into it honestly as to why you want to vlog.
Yeah.
So. If you're honestly thinking you're going to make lots of money from it, even if it's in the back of your mind, well, it could take off. Well, it's an awful lot of work. It's an awful lot of investment of time with getting nothing back, even when your sub count goes up and you're getting lots of views. That shouldn't really be your motivation. And a lot of people are saying, go for it. If you want a vlog, go out and vlog. But if you really love your landscape photography and you love your stills photography, think hard before you do it. Would be my honest advice. Think really hard, because it does impact. If you're time strapped, in particular, if it's not your full-time occupation, yeah, yeah, blogging or as a landscape photographer, it does impact on your enjoyment of taking images, still images, because you've got something else to think about.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really good advice. Like, you've got to kind of understand what your priorities are, and it, especially if you do want to further your career as a result of these vlogs. I think that's going to be, I'm not trying to discourage anybody, but that's going to be harder today as it was when I started. And I think that's always been the case. It was, if I'd started 5 years earlier, it would have been easier.
Yes.
So it's not to say that it can't be done.
No.
Because there's always, your personality might be fresh. It might be something that clicks with people.
I think if you want to do landscape photography or photography in general as a career, which you are, let's be honest, you are choosing a very difficult career. It's a vocation. Yeah. It's got to be a passion. You've got to wake up in the morning and eat, sleep and breathe wanting to be a photographer.
Yeah, yeah.
But if that's your driver,
then
really YouTube is a must. Because even if your sub count is relatively low, you can link that through on your website.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're gaining exposure, aren't you?
Yeah, and even what I've found is good with that is that, say you've done a year's worth of vlogs, you can then edit that year into a 2-minute video with some inspirational music behind it. This says, this is what I am. As a photographer,
this is what I do.
This is what I'm all about.
Yeah.
If it depends on your production quality, but you get a drone spinning around you and you've got you capturing the shot or getting a bit emotional about a scene. Mm. And it says a lot about you. Mm. And the video connects with people in a way that a CV, a written CV or an email can never do.
Mm.
And I think that's a really good part of it. But I think people, there's still definitely space for people to make it big. How many billions of people are getting online every month?
Of course, there is. We've seen it, haven't we, with vloggers coming up, up and coming vloggers who've exploded post the traditional ones that have done that started.
Yeah.
But you know, the hours are put in there. But the other thing that you've got to remember though is the majority of people that are watching are photographers, aren't they?
Yeah.
So what you're doing is you're going to be generating leads and potential workshop customers and things like that. You're not going to sell loads of prints other photographers.
Not on
they're not going
like
to buy
that.
Them. And obviously there's other revenue that can come off the back of it. If people have seen you over 12 months shooting and you produce a book, a photo, a coffee table book with your images on, then the people are likely to buy that. Yeah. Fellow photographers are likely to buy that.
I think at the moment, with the people that are spending thousands of pounds on a landscape print are not watching YouTube.
No,
that may change though moving forward. Like, because people who are 45 now are watching YouTube. When they're 65 and they have that kind of accumulated that amount of wealth, then you know, so that's why I think there is still space for more people to come into it. I remember telling when I first started my channel, we all start with zero, don't we? My best mate was my first subscriber and my mum was my second,
right?
And I remember, I mean, they were both supportive, but the few people that I told thought it was nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, especially when I was kind of talking seriously about spending time on it and trying to grow it into something, it's a bonkers thing to do. Just suddenly putting yourself out there. And it's still like, if my mate said, I'm starting a YouTube channel, I'd still think, really? But I'd be yes, yeah, do it. Like, because I'm excited to see it. I've got a mate of mine, one of the school dads. He's just started a YouTube channel about tea.
Right.
He's like, he's a really big fan of tea.
Right.
And he's talking about, he's started a tea club. So he's talking about the different teas you can get hold of.
Yeah.
And he filmed a video the other week from the side of Loch Ness, because we're on holiday up there. And he's just telling me, because he's a doctor, he was telling us about some of the science behind, is tea healthy? So he'd done a lot of research and was talking through it. It's fascinating stuff. And there's lots of different angles you can go down, even within the landscape photography space or street photography space or whatever other genre of photography you do, to actually still make something new.
I think, as you say, you're talking about generations as well, aren't you? So I'm 10 years older than you. Gary is 10 years older than me.
Yeah.
But there's going to be a load of young kids coming through that are going to be have far more chance of grabbing those young teen audiences. Yeah. You know, I'm waiting for the first 16...
They're going to have much better ideas than we've ever had.
Of course, yeah. I'm waiting for the first 15 or 16-year-old YouTube landscape vlogger. Because when that kicks off, he's going to get all the other kids watching him.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And they're the ones that are really raking in the millions of subscribers.
When you're filming a video, do you do it in one take? Are you a one take wonder?
No, I'm. You know, don't you? I wing it. There's no planning with my videos at all, and I end up with maybe a couple of hours of footage, if not more.
Right.
And that's an absolute pain.
So, in terms of having no plan, are you talking about where you go, or
I have an idea of where I go.
Yeah.
Particularly if I'm shooting at a location that I'm not familiar with. So right. If I go to Snowdonia and we're going for a week away, there are certain areas.
So you have a stills photography plan.
Yes.
But not a
vlog.
Not
a vlog plan.
And that comes across in your videos. I think it's that kind of really dynamic, interesting feel, like anything could happen almost.
That's a really positive way of saying it.
No, it is positive.
The other thing is because I've tried planning it, and you've got to do, if you're going to vlog, you've got to play to your strengths. And if your strengths are that you love to get the maps out and meticulously plan, we'll vlog that bit. Yeah. And show you using the maps and then talk about that.
It's just little story links, isn't it?
Little story links, and there are people out there that are going to be the meticulous planners that are going to say, that's awesome because that's what I do.
Yeah.
And he's doing exactly what I do and he uses the same apps. And play to those strengths. My strengths are not that. Where I get my buzz from coming out is, like today, we're in an area that we've got blue skies, nothing much interesting, but I can't wait to get out and look for some interesting intimate shots.
Yeah, me too.
And that's what I get my buzz from, the stills photography. I mean, we were talking about Charlie, weren't we? And Charlie Waite's stuff. His stuff is intimate, is very, very clever.
Yeah.
And, you know, digesting his images is a bit like having a three-course meal. It's just awesome to do. But going back to your question, if I planned it, then it would come across differently,
and my
personality
would not be there. Genuine to you.
So I think planning it is awesome if that is you, and I think that's a really, really good tip. If anybody is going to vlog, be yourself. Be yourself. Your personality, I can quite attest to this, is exactly the same on camera as it is off camera. So you are who you are. If you try and be something else, you'll either trip yourself up long term or it'll drain you to try and be something you're not. It happens to all the movie stars, the television personalities.
I think they often talk about just turning your personality up a notch. So it's not dishonest, is it? But and it's not deceptive or anything, but I can imagine how that stresses you after a while.
I couldn't do it. And if if you watch my vids, there's some videos where I'm miserable on them because it's raining. And I'm not going to be jumping.
I like
up
seeing
and down.
That. I couldn't
jump up and down. You know?
I've been criticised for it before, though, of the video not being really positive.
No. And my advice to those individuals is, well, you come out and show me how it's done when it's absolutely hammering it down. You're soaking wet. All your camera equipment's soaking wet. And you've got a four-hour drive to get home and you've got no shots.
Yeah. That's a good point, actually, about the drive home, is that's what people don't see. Like, people honestly, I get people, especially people that live abroad, not in the UK, I get people that say, I'm so lucky to live so close to the Lake District. I'm like, it's like a three and a half hour drive sometimes if I'm going over to the West Lakes.
Yeah.
And that's at night in the summer after sunset, because I want to get home to see my kids the next morning. Mm-hmm. So it's like I'm getting home at like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning.
It's 7 hours worth of driving before you even pick up your camera.
Yeah.
And then you've got to do your pieces to camera.
Yeah.
And then you've got to get a semi-decent image to put out on the vlog. And I think that is the most difficult thing.
Mm.
And that's where I admire people like yourself that put them in, week out, is to get something that is interesting enough to keep the viewer's attention, technically good enough shot, and also to because you know, I know that you'll plan your shoots more than I do, but when you get to the location, there's no planning, is there?
No.
You've got to come up with something creative.
I mean, I'm about to make a video now, and I've got no idea what I'm going to do or talk about.
No.
But I mean, what? There's been times when I think, and I don't think I could have done this when I first started, but there's been times when I've not been sure how the shoot has gone. I'm confident I've said a few decent things to camera, but then I'm not sure how my actual landscape photography has turned out. Mm. I get, and I don't feel particularly good about it. Then I get home, and I realise that it's actually not too bad.
Mm.
Yeah, you kind of get into that workflow where you're just doing your thing, essentially. Mm. And because I've done it so much, and I've got a video workflow, I've got a landscape photography workflow that all sort of now intermingles. Mm. You can just fall. It's almost like, you know, when they say you fall back on your training.
Mm.
That's essentially what I'm doing,
mm.
and it just turns out all right.
Mm.
They're not my best videos, but they're enough to still put the video out.
Absolutely, and that's something that I'm appalling at, is that I don't have that workflow because of how I get the footage.
Mm.
So I've got to go through and because if I put the footage out, I ramble on a lot.
Yeah.
I ramble on a lot to camera as if I'm talking to you,
yeah.
You know, and the camera, a lot of people will say to me, how do you vlog? Because I've tried it, and people worry about silly things like my voice doesn't sound right, or my voice doesn't sound right, you know. I've got awful facial expressions where I look like Wallace.
I think it's great.
Yeah, but, you know, and then, as I say, as we've been told in the past, I've got a face for audio as well. So if I do it, and what I did is, what I recommended, sorry, to the people, because a lot of people email you, don't they, and say, how do you do it? I said, just don't have the camera switched on for the first couple of outings and just talk to it. And then switch it on, and then
I say
don't worry about what footage you're getting.
Yeah.
Just talk to the camera with it on, because it'll feel a little bit different.
Yeah.
And then get home and have a look at your footage and see if you've got
it. It's hard at first, isn't it?
It's really hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard. I mean, you're so self-conscious.
Yeah.
But it's like anything, isn't it? When you've done it a few times, you don't think about it,
no.
Do you?
I remember I was filming one of my very early videos. It was at a reservoir in Yorkshire somewhere. Can't remember which one. Thrust Cross Reservoir. I was doing a video about infrared photography, landscape photography, and it was a spot very similar to this, actually. Had the camera set up on the tripod talking to the camera, and then there was a path just behind the trees, and every time I heard someone coming, I was like, I've got to stop, because I didn't want them to see me
vlogging,
talking to the camera like some sort of idiot in the middle of nowhere.
Do you still get self-conscious
when people walk past?
I do. If I'm in a group, I did a shoot where it was a waterfall and I was really, really self-conscious.
I think the reason I don't is not because of any change in my personality, but a change in my subscriber number on YouTube. So say if someone sees me vlogging now, this was the case when I went to London, you can say, well, I've got 20,000 subscribers, mate. And that's how your friends and family see you as well. They see that number as a significant thing, and gives people, even though the subscriber number is not really, doesn't have as much meaning as people think, but people apply meaning to that.
Mm.
So they'll think, this guy is real. He's serious. People must like what he's doing because he's got 20,000 subscribers. Mm. And I think that must have affected me, because when that started happening, I was more confident about filming in front of people because I didn't feel as much like it was just a game. Do you know what I mean?
I think you hit the nail on the head there, because when you do get your subscriber base does go up, particularly to your levels, is you only look higher, don't you? But, you know, for people when they've got 500 or 1,000 subscribers, if you put 1,000 people into a hall, you would fill a hall, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
And those
even
thousand,
less than that, though, 100.
Yeah, yeah.
Imagine speaking to a room of 100 people. That's a lot of people.
I know. And, you know, and so if people are getting, you know, 100 or 200 people watching the vids, still a lot of people, isn't it?
Yeah. It was crazy because not so long ago, when I was still in the police, I was doing training, and I would get more nervous talking to a class of 12 people than I would publishing a video to 5 to 10,000 people at that time.
One of the most stressful things that you can do. Is public speaking.
Is it?
Yeah, from a psychological point of view, it's absolutely huge, yeah. No wonder.
So how do you feel, right, on every time you've spent all that time going out, doing a shoot, spending the hours it takes to edit it, how do you feel just before you hit that publish button?
Sick.
Do you?
Mm.
Why?
Because everybody wants to be liked, and you know, you put the video out. I think the problem is if you have a modicum of success, if that success starts to go away, then you think your brain thinks it'll take that as a personal slight. And you're putting yourself out there, aren't you, for criticism?
Yeah.
I do get nervous when I press I schedule them now if I can. But then I'm looking at my watch and thinking it's going out in 2 minutes.
What I've started doing is like scheduling it for when, well, I mean, it's the same time every week usually, but I'll schedule it and then make sure I'm busy at that time. So I'm not immediately then paying attention to the very early comments and things. Do you do anything like that?
I will do. The thing is when I first started, I became quite popular very quickly. And I got these people coming in that do it with a lot of very successful YouTubers where they go first, yeah? And what would happen is within 10 minutes of me putting a video out, 1,000 people would have watched, and loads of comments would have come in. But because of my personal life, I couldn't keep those videos coming out every week. So my subscriber base has stayed the same and grown slowly, but the number of views has dropped.
Yeah.
So what I don't get is that immediate rush anymore.
Right.
And I'm all right with that. Yeah, I'm okay with that, if you know what I mean. It's nice to think of what could have been, as if I'd have really done it every week, week in, week out. But I'm cool with what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And so now when I vlog, I'm enjoying it again because I didn't.
I was going to ask you that. You still enjoy it?
I didn't. I wasn't enjoying it. I was putting it out for reasons other than why I started it in the first place. And now I'm putting them out. And the beauty is, What the vlogging has done is building relationships with people like you, with people like Gary, who are doing the podcast. Yeah. That's become a whole new pastime for me.
Yeah.
Associated with
literally none of that would have happened, would it?
No, we're doing something that I love. Because out of everything that I've done, because I've had lots and lots of hobbies, the only two things that I've really continuously done throughout my whole life is my golf and my photography. This. Where with golf frustrates me, photography never does. It never does. Even when I get home.
It frustrates me.
Yeah, even when I get, does it?
Yeah.
Why?
I think it's because of, it may be, no, I was going to say it might be because of the vlogs, but it's not. I've always wanted to go out and get a good shot. I think a lot of people feel like that. Certainly clients I have in workshops feel like that. And sometimes it's kind of rebranding to yourself almost what a successful trip is.
I think it is, and the number of people, I think that's something that came across from my blogs, is go out and have a go, take the shot, and don't worry if you don't get the image.
Yeah.
And that's the reason is I learn as much if not more when I don't get the shot as I do when I do, because when I get it, that's what I'm expecting. When I don't, then I will go through it and think, well, hang on, why didn't that work? What is it that's not worked in my head with the shot? Was it something technical that I've done, so I forgot and I ended up putting it to 25,000 ISO? See me. Or is it something that's just not working quite well within the shot? It's all experience, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So that kind of idea about, is the shot important to the vlog? Do you think it is?
That's a question that I would really love to get. And maybe I could do a vlog, or you could do a vlog and ask that question. Fishes are jumping. It's only important for me that the viewer will appreciate it, will appreciate the shot, because I don't want them to think, well, this guy don't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
Do you understand me?
Yeah.
But it isn't possible when you come out and vlog week in and week out to get those awesome, and I've been like ridiculed by other vloggers about it. Portfolio shots.
Right.
Just not, you know, your Joe Cornish's, your Charlie Waits, they've got a portfolio of 150, 200 images over 25 years.
We're
going out week in, week out, and people like yourself are doing a brilliant job at it of getting stunning images week in, week out. And some of them are not portfolio shots, but they're blooming good.
Yeah, I personally think it's about, I do think for me, the shot is important because I'm going out there and I'm teaching people photography, and people are paying money to hear what I have to say about photography. And
yeah.
I think I'm a professional.
Of course.
I think for me that it does matter. Obviously, I am going to show some of the times when it doesn't go quite to plan, and not every, like you say, not every shot is at that portfolio image. But I think it does matter for me personally as well to get a good shot. But I think it's the way you sell yourself as a person and what you stand for.
Mm.
So if you're saying, I am brand new to landscape photography, say that's who you are, you're brand new to landscape photography, you're 18 years old, you've only been doing it for 5 months, but you love it.
Mm.
You start going out and doing vlogs, you've got an amazing personality that's just clicking with people all the time, you're funny, you are... do you know what I mean? It resonates.
Mm.
But your pictures are not great,
no.
Or sometimes they're terrible.
Yeah.
That's gold, I think. And then to then see over a couple of years, to see the progression and that documentary of that progression, and your personality progresses as well. I think that's amazing. That's the kind of thing that interests me now.
Mm. I agree entirely. But you mentioned something there about being a pro. So your raw room stuff.
Mm.
Yeah, that raw room stuff. Those images have got to be on point because you're going through a tutorial.
Yeah, you're going through
the technical aspects of getting the shot, compositional aspects of getting the shot. That's fine. But what I'm saying is we can't control the weather.
No.
So when I've not got the images that I would maybe be 100% happy with to go out on YouTube, it's weather determined.
Yeah.
So it's either peed it down, or I've been in at the sea with salt spray, and unless you take your lenses back out the field into your car and clean everything off, and water and everything to clean that salt spray off, they're going to affect your images. Or if it's raining and everything's soaking wet, you're not going to get that perfect shot unless you're lucky.
It looks great on the film, though, doesn't it?
It does, but then it's warts and all, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that's why I've always said, and it's now said by a lot of people, is I do shoot warts and all, because what I'd hate for people to think is it can be really dishonest of us to go out and shoot week in, week out, and come out with awesome images, and really disheartening for people. And they'll think, well, I'm sod that for a game of soldiers. Mm. I'm going to sell my camera and take up golf, because I don't get images like that.
Yeah.
Neither do I. I can go out week in, week out and not get the shots.
Yeah.
And that was a difficult one.
That's a really good point, though. But I said it on one of my YouTube videos recently. It was Theodore Roosevelt that said it, is comparison is the thief of joy.
Mm.
And that's particularly true on social media. It's particularly true in photography.
I love that quote.
And if you've just started vlogging and you compare your video to mine or to yours.
Or to yours.
That's not going to do you any favours, because I've crafted that over a number of years.
Mm.
I look back, I mean, I show it sometimes because I think it's funny, but looking back at some of my early videos, and they're terrible.
Mm.
Like, I'm embarrassed by them, but I think showing them to people is, they can see that it's a progression, and that if you put the time in, you put
it'll
develop.
Mm.
I think that's a really good point.
I think the people are coming in, though, aren't they? And learning from our mistakes, and coming in with, and their bar's high, because they are shooting excellent videos.
Yeah.
We made the mistakes, and then they see what particularly the people like yourself are producing, and they're coming in straight at that level.
Yeah.
And producing those.
Do you think
videos.
That makes it harder to then maintain that?
I think it puts a lot of pressure on the person, and it does become everybody else is doing the same thing, aren't they?
Do you feel the pressure to create?
I feel the pressure to create. Yeah.
How do you cope with that?
Well, I had to make that decision that I couldn't because of family. Things, and it was, you know, I know for a fact, I started vlogging 2.5 years ago, I know for a fact that if I'd have done it week in, week out, I'd have been up near you now, because it was that popular. But what I did is I put the brakes on because of family reasons. I had to really look deep into myself and say, what did I start this for in the first place, and be honest with myself.
Yeah.
It was never going to be another career for me.
Yeah.
Which would be nice as you get a little bit older, maybe do workshops and things like that. But people would contact me and say, do you do workshops? I said, no, I'll go out and shoot with you, but I don't do them as per se.
Yeah.
Now that might change, because if I could ease back a bit in my job and do a little bit more of something I love, fine. But I had to come in that, in my mindset, would that detract some of the enjoyment of doing what I enjoy anyway from it? So you know, my drivers were just a little bit different.
Yeah.
And to give that up and not put a blog out for 2 months isn't easy when you've got that subscriber base. But what I found is people on the whole are great. You know, you put a blog out.
Did you find out what was? So you left with a certain number of views when you went on your break.
Yeah.
And when you've come back, what did that do to the viewing figures?
What it did is my average viewing figures for a video would be about 15k. Yeah, but that's when I was doing them week in, week out, week after week after week after week. And then I started to do a little bit longer in between, and they dropped down to about 7 or 8, and now they're at about 5,000 on a regular. So I can leave it 3 months.
That's not bad though, is it?
No, it's amazing. You know, and I love the viewers for that. I've not been there for 3 months, and then I put a video out, and 5,000 people is the cop end at Man U. If there is a cop end at Man U, sorry if there isn't. But you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a lot of people.
Yeah.
5,000 people have took it on the mind. Oh, Paul's put a video out. It's not been out for 3 months. Tick.
Mm. Yeah, it's good. It's reassuring, I think, that you can have a break. I think there was a time possibly when YouTube wouldn't allow that, but I don't think we're there anymore, because there's been so much talk about burnout that we're now at the stage where if you miss a week, or even there are people successful now within the photography space who are putting out one video a month or so, once a fortnight, and still doing very well.
Yeah,
I think you've got to find the schedule that works for you, essentially.
You see, I think the YouTube, the way YouTube works with landscape photography and other genres on YouTube is completely different, because what you do is you get a loyal subscriber fan base.
Mm.
So there'll be those people that...
Do you think that comes about?
Because they enjoy your content and they enjoy your personality.
Yeah.
And so when that bell rings, they go, oh, Adam's put a video out, or Paul's put a video out. And they're not coming to see your images per se. You know, you'll get the comments that your images are lovely, various other things, but they're coming for you.
Hmm.
They must be. But with people like these YouTube vloggers, the young lads, they're a major personality and the kids love to watch them. But then they'll skip to someone else. They've got no loyalty. And in 3 or 4 months' time, somebody else big will come along, because I see it with my kids. So one minute it's Zoella, and then the next minute it's somebody else that she's watching.
It's
and same with my little
it's
lad.
A trend, essentially. Yeah.
And there's so many other people coming on the market. And I think what landscape photography viewers will do is they might watch somebody new, but they'll still go back and watch.
Yeah.
I don't think they'll just say, well, he's better than him, so I'm not going to watch him anymore. Because they like you as the person. Because it is a very personable thing, isn't it, photography?
Okay, so I hope you enjoyed that. I think that's a really useful conversation. It's definitely something I would have loved to have heard when I first started. Some things to avoid, some things to do, and just some things to consider, because it's no small thing starting a vlog as you start talking to a lens and putting yourself out into the world. I definitely think it's something that can be valuable, exciting, and can reinvigorate you all around as you become more creative, and that's a very exciting thing. But there are some things to consider before you get going, because, like I say, it's no small thing.